You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. Our government cares about you.
They ain't giving up a second thought about you, no. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me. With your life
running like a red disease,
running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself. You got to learn to love yourself. Yeah, ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at Time for an Awakening.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day today, and I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it, because if it's not, and it has to get done, you will get it done. That's right. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that. In the drop-down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that. And then there will be programs that are dated and titled. I'm going to get the lineup here, but we're going to forego the regular announcements. I have two outstanding guests in the community here in Atlanta. Brother Sincere, who'll be joining me shortly, and then Brother Bomani Tahimba of Africa for the Africans, who will talk about his recent trip to Senegal and Gambia and what other nice things he has in store for you to be able to take advantage of and have an opportunity to have a trip of a lifetime to the motherland. So you want to make sure that you're ready for that. Other programming we have here, of course, on Time for an Awakening Media. This program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And all times are going to give our Eastern times. On Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jahal Ahmed. Followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and the Taki Kamban. And then at 9 p.m., Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. And then on Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. I haven't been able to listen to Dr. Rogers because my grandson has basketball on practice on Tuesdays. And unfortunately, they don't have any Wi-Fi. They don't have no damn Wi-Fi. So I don't get a chance to listen to Dr. Rogers. But, hey, you know, it's my man, Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank on Tuesdays from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, today, this evening, the Black Farmers Program is supposed to debut this Wednesday. I believe it's at 7 o'clock. The Black Farmers Program is about an hour long. And then no program on Thursday at this time. And then on Fridays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an Awakening. And on Saturdays, from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers from 4 to 6. And then from 7 to 9 on Saturdays, the Sankofa Elders Council.
And then on Sundays at 7 p.m., once again, brothers and sisters, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an awakening right here. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inye Sesem. April 20th. Self-help is the best help. I mean, let me repeat. Self-help is the best help. Aesop. Aesop fables. Wisdom. Yes. People raised on a diet of ease and unearned excess purposefully socialized to reject the idea of an independent thinking and actually working to produce for self place little, if any, value or concern on their rights. They assume them to be automatic. People who receive and expect to receive all they desire without any effort on their part, and even in spite of their very every effort not to earn them, place little long term, and even after immediate value on what they receive. They simply expect whatever it is to be there whenever they want it. As most African people have voluntarily moved to a sense of security in European hands, many of us have been ushered into a purely consuming and leisure mentality, all the while being systematically guided away from any aspirations for real effective power. Our enslavement process, now intensified by the process of emptying our souls of the strength of our human character through removing the drive for and reason behind laboring to produce and maintain an autonomous state of being. Before, the whip, noose, and various other forms of institutionalized racism kept us in check. Now, we are suffocating under the weight of our own powerlessness. Decadent indulgence. I say. Affirm. I beg no one to do what I can do for myself. Affirm. I beg no one to do what I can do for myself. I say. April 21st. Your belief in the system makes it real. I repeat, your belief in the system makes it real. Phil Valentine. We act like this is the way things have to be, but there is nothing in divinity which is in arrangement with that patently flawed, self-defeating, menticidal assumption. Submission to that which is alien is the Negro way, not the warrior's way. This is how those who believe that they have been defeated. Have been defeated and seek a slave's comfort, think and act, not those of us who know who we are and why we are here. Warriors are not defeated, or they would not be warriors. They know better. They know better than to act as if the prevailing way is some interpersonal, depoliticized reality. They know that the system is not the government. I repeat, the system is not the government. It is far beyond that. The system is the culture which created the government, and the culture is the functional reality created by that group of people whose customs designed it to fit their collective personality. Africans who know that we are at war for the survival and sanity of African people know that this culture is Urugu's. This is Urugu's child, this culture. They know that it is Urugu. Such warriors do not relinquish authority over their minds or destiny to the confusion of a spiritually deficient and wayward child who has historically demonstrated an insatiable envy of us and the Creator. It is a resentment which has found expression through centuries of a tyrannical, psychopathic destruction which denies our existence. They know what is horribly wrong and have the courage and resilience to work to change things into ma'at that they must be if we are to remain sane African people. Vanquishment into oblivion, where we can forget the evil we breathe through defensively becoming one with it, is not an option. There is no alternative to righteousness. There is no other way to humanity. Affirm, I only believe in the system created by our ancestors. Affirm, I only believe in the system created by our ancestors, our culture, our way, the African way. Ashe, the Inye Sesim of daily revolutionary thought. So, dear brothers and sisters, I'm going, like I said, we're going to forego the announcements today. And we'll obviously definitely have them ready for us to deal with on our next day, you know. So let me see, where am I at here? This is where I'm at. Brother Sincere.
Peace and love, family. How you doing?
I'm doing well, my dear brother. How are you this day?
All is well. I'm not going to have it any other way.
I know that's right. Well, I know a lot of our people are happy and ecstatic over the verdict yesterday. I understand that. But I wish we understood that it means really nothing in our overall situation here in the hells of North America. In dealing with this madness, it really means nothing. You know, the Floyd family feels vindicated. The Floyd family also have been, I don't know how much money it was that they were received from the city of Minneapolis, Minnesota, state of Minnesota. You know, and that's great for them. In fact, that's part of the defense's, you know, going to set a new right. trial because of the amount of the settlement that they got and other issues that happened, which I don't think will be, you know, I think he'll still get the time that he's going to get, and it won't be a lot of time. You know, he's not going to get 40 years, which he could get. Nothing even close to that. Might be a quarter of that, might be 5 years, might be 10 years, maybe, you know, and also which he won't be in the general population, you know, that where he would be attacked by other brothers who see, oh, that's, you know, Derek Chauvin who killed George Floyd, give his ass a beat down, you know, that's not going to happen. You got a lot of background noise, Brother Sincere.
Oh, okay. I'll get to a silent position here in a moment.
Okay, that'll be fine. When you get a chance, that's cool.
Right.
But in the meantime, let's talk about this case for a moment, and let me get your perspective of what you think about it, and then of course we'll talk about what we're here to talk about today, and that of course is the program that is coming up this Saturday, Black Debonair, and an evening of networking, honoring, and elevation of black men, which is so vitally important. I think any time that we can focus in this society about what brothers are doing, what they're doing with one another, what they're doing with their families, what they're doing with their complements, their significant others, their children. Anytime we can talk about what brothers are doing in terms of entrepreneurship and involving other people to get involved in other programs, that needs to be highlighted. So I agree. Brother Sincere, are you there?
Yes, absolutely. I'm right here.
Okay. All right. Like I said, I wanted to first get your reaction to the verdict of yesterday and your perspective on it, and then we'll get off into the Black Debonair, the program this Saturday at the.
Yes, I think that for a lot of people, there was a little bit of solace in the fact that. A lot of folks didn't expect much based on what this system has shown us over a specific period of time. But there was a brother that said, I don't rejoice in things that that should be normal.
Right.
But I'll say this. Like, I created a post because oftentimes I get asked my outlook on these things, and I addressed it from a poetic thought process. And what I wanted folks to understand was simply this. This system has many faces, and he's one of them. Some of those faces look like him. Some of those faces, they look like us. And there's a programming. There's a deviancy to this system. So from a tactical standpoint, I have a military background. From a tactical standpoint, like, you always have to understand what type of environment you go into. And that says whether or not you're going to have a proposition to come out alive or come out on top. So it's an understanding of this system and understanding of our greatness that's going to push us to the next level. So we really have to dig into that and what that means. Now, in this specific case, I'm glad that he was found guilty on those charges, because it was blatant murder. We know this. But we have to stick close to us, what we need to do, who we are, our mission, our purpose, and not be distracted by the likes of this system or any other that's not for us. So that's where I stand on it, and that's what the event that we're doing this Saturday is all about. Our focus being on us and where we need to be and how we need to empower each other to deal with this madness. And to see ourselves through.
To see ourselves through our own eyes, our own African eyes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Ashe. Yeah. I understand that, and but I know too, based upon our understanding of our situation here, once the verdict was read and that we won, it was just, you know, for a lot of our people, of relief and hope and so forth, and all kinds of euphoria, and not understanding the system that we're in, the culture that we're in, and whose it is, and not understanding how this thing always plays out. You know, no, there will not be any real reform. No, there not will be. No, there not will be any kind of deep reform in terms of criminal justice, because the system itself has to have a police force. Not just to do what they do to us, but to the general society, because you have a society based on capitalism. And that society says that in order for me to have all that I have, a whole bunch of folks can't have nothing. And that breeds the kind of discontent and hatred and envy, because there is no sharing, you know? And so those who have all that they have, they want to make sure that the police are there. You know, I know, and you know, that for many times there have been, since Rodney King, because of the camcorder at that time, and now because of everybody's walking around with a camera, you know, on with their cell phones, that things are being shown, you know, exactly how they're happening. You know, almost, I'll venture to say very few things that do happen only happen if it's out of sight, because nobody was there with their phone. Nobody was there to record it. But since Rodney King, and what happened with Rodney King? Well, Rodney King took a severe beat down. The defense felt they could not get a fair trial in L.A. County. Then they moved it to Simi Valley. And in Simi Valley is where the verdict came down, you know, that these officers were not guilty. Why? Because like then and now and in the future, the people who run this situation, those good people, those wealthy people, they must have a buffer between them and the people who they dog out. And, of course, the police are there to make sure that it maintains. So they give the police the benefit of the doubt. They give them the latitude to do whatever they have to do. If I rough you up, so be it. If you die in the process, you know, because this is a society now based on comply or die. If I tell you to get on the ground, put your hands behind your back, you better do it. If you don't do it, I can rough you up and possibly kill you and have it justified. And so, you know, that happened then and it continues to happen. The only one that I know where an officer went to prison because another person had a camera was in South Carolina when the Caucasian shot that brother in the back, and you see him literally planting a weapon, whether it was a knife or whether it was a gun or whatever it was, you see him dropping it right there. You know, so the fact that he was caught on camera, you know, led, because really, especially if it's somebody deceased, it's, you know, their word against yours. And if that person is deceased, there is no word. But even at that, a lot of times, if it's me getting beat down by the police and I live to tell it, and I'm saying that what happened to me is, you know, was wrong, but yet the police, that is their version, then there's my version, who is going to be believed? Exactly. The police department and the police unions that protect them. You know, the police unions that protect them. And I'm not sure what they did for Derek Chauvin, but obviously what really dusted that cat was a number of police officers who said that is not the practice that we use. The chief of the police themselves, and very seldom would the chief of police do that. But of course, the chief of police is a brother who just got that job because of that situation. So, you know, I agree with you, Brother Sincere, you know, that we got to protect ourselves. We got to look out for each other. And we got to, you know, get justice if we can, wherever it can be. You know, that's the bottom line. So now, this Saturday, we have the Black Debonair. Tell us about the program.
Yes, absolutely. I'm proud to do work in the community where people see that there are some great things that's going on with our people. And the Black Debonair just kind of perpetuates that idea. It was an event that was put together by two sisters, and they commissioned me to host it. And I was one of the first Black Debonairs based on the work that I do in the community with youth and with couples, with, you know, with young men and women. And the Black Debonair is to celebrate the brother. It is to celebrate the young man, the young boy that's doing something that's effective, that's galvanizing in the way of the communal, and it's recognizing how great we are, what we are, what we have been from the very beginning. So it's shining a light on that. So I'm appreciative to the sister LaWanda that continues to do great things and recognize men and women in the community. So she put together the Black Debonairs, which will be happening at the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. Doors open at 6:30 on Saturday. So I can't wait to honor you, brother, for programs just like this. There's another young brother who is a creative. He creates merchandise, 24 years old, and just a real positive brother. And we also have a young man, 12 years old, who's an author that we will be honoring on Saturday. So it's a worthwhile event. It's about information being entertainment. So you get what you need on a number of different levels. So, again, we're happy to honor you for what you do because we're appreciative of you. And we see you, brother.
Well, I thank you. I sincerely thank you. And with all my heart, and I'm truly heartfelt. And you have the generations represented. Myself, the younger brother, about 20 some years old, and then of course the young brother. What did he say? He's 12 years old?
12 years old, Isaiah.
Right on. That's great. And, you know, and to me, it is always good to recognize brothers and sisters in our community that are doing some positive things, that are trying to uplift our people, that are trying to bring knowledge and inspiration to our people. It's always great to do that and to acknowledge them. And as a saying goes, give them their flowers while they're living, you know. And of course, I hope brother, the other honorees understand that when you are given these acknowledgments, which is good work, and the reward for good work is more work. So we're not asking you, we're going to give you an award and now you rest on your laurels. No, brother, you got to take it to another level, you know, and continue to do good work. I know I'm a member of ASCAC, the Association for Study of Classical African Civilizations. And that was our saying back then. And Sister Nzinga, who made her transition about 10 years ago, and she would say, and I'm not sure if that it was her saying or somebody within ASCAC, you know, I believe it was Baba Jacob Carruthers, Baba Jehudi, said the reward for good work is more work. Because the bottom line is we continue to need what amount of help that we can get, or all the help that we can get as a people, you know. And so those who are doing good things, who are being honored, continue to do so. And I appreciate you acknowledging what I do. And, you know, I've been doing this radio program now for 7 years. And I try my best to come on the radio every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, and try to put something on our people's minds. You know, get us to think, get us to think outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have put us in, to get us to think outside of them. And then once that begins to happen, or more importantly, to break the monopoly that they have on our minds, or deeper yet, the vice grip that the European has on our minds. And if you understand that tool, once the vice grip is set, you can't pull it apart. It cannot be even the strongest man can't pull it apart. And but what needs to happen is that the vice grip has a knob at the end of the handle. The turning of that knob is acquiring knowledge of self. The more you get knowledge of self, the more you're able to turn until finally the tension is released and you release the vice grip. And now you see the European, the Urugu, the Caucasian, the white person, the Gragger, for who and what they are, and not that you challenge them, because you can't challenge them because they suffer from cognitive dissonance. They don't give a damn what you say or care about what you do. They will continue doing what they've been doing, even though there's a mounds of evidence to prove they're not superior, to prove that what they've done is a lie and a fallacy. But because that's how they are and that's who they are, this is what happens. And so we need to break this monopoly that they have on our minds, and let us come together and programs such as this to acknowledge people who are doing this kind of work is so essential. And we thank you for that, brother.
Yeah, thank you, brother. This is hard work. This is the work that has to be done. I'm often asked, again, when I think about different situations that happen in our culture, and it's based on what you just said. I just continue to work, you know, continuing to be mission-oriented. And that's, like, the more of us that acquire that type of steadfastness, it loosens those vice grips that you were talking about. That knowledge of self, that understanding that they know who we are.
Yes, they do.
They know what we are.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They do. We have to live in who we are and what we are and break away from that illusion of power. That they don't have any. They know it.
You know, but
we just have to stop believing it.
Right. And that's Remember, in the Inye Sesim, when I read that, you know, what he was saying was, you know, your belief in the system makes it real. Your belief in it, that makes it real. It is not real, but because we have been trained to believe in this, that's what makes it real. We follow their definitions. They define, there's a saying, they define reality. You know, that's what power is. Power is the ability to define reality. They defined reality. Whenever they impacted a people, whenever they came across a different people, they imposed their culture. They imposed their way. They didn't give a damn what that other people talked about, what they believed, how they did this or that or whatever. They didn't give a damn about none of that. Because when the European came out of that dark age, that medieval age, and decided to go around the world and take everybody's stuff in the name of, they didn't come to bargain. They didn't come to, you know, banter. They didn't come to bargain or barter. They didn't come to trade. No. They came to take. And the fact that you were there, you know, I don't give a damn if you've been here and how long you've been here. I discovered it. It's mine. You know? And they suffer.
Right.
And they suffer from not only cognitive dissonance, which is the belief that they are superior and nothing could tell them otherwise, and even though there's so much evidence to prove otherwise, they dismiss it and ignore it. But they also suffer from what this Caucasian woman named Dr. DeAngelo said is white fragility. You know, they don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear about it. They don't want to hear what you got to say. You know, they don't want to hear about the fact that they practice genocide, the fact that they've taken people's land and culture and artwork and so forth. They don't want to hear it because they want to believe, Brother Sincere, that the white folks are good people. And look what we've done to the world. Look what we've done for the world. We brought technology. We did this. We did that. You know. And then the other thing they suffer from is hegemony or hegemony, whichever word you want to use. And basically what that is, what's mine's is mine's, and what's yours is mine's, you know. You know, so that's why to me, you know, when you talk about programs, and you do a lot of programs, brother, I really admire you and respect you for your talent. And, you know, you bring people together in good, meaningful programs. When you had the poetry piece a couple weeks ago, man, that was beautiful, brother. That was fantastic, you know.
Thank you.
Yes, yeah, you know. So you are constantly enlightening us as well as entertaining us, you know. And that's good. We need that, you know, because it's not just poetry. It's not just music. It's a form of enlightening the mind. It's soothing the soul, bringing knowledge. And that's what's
right.
Good. Yeah. And we need that.
Right. Yes, sir. And thank you for being a part of it. Like, we can't do this alone. I can't do this work alone. You can't do this work alone. So my whole thing is to make sure that we use the communal aspect that always has been and always will be our source of power. It's coming together collectively for the greater good. And that's what everything that I do is about, from the arts and culture show that I'm a part in, every organization, the Why Should I Get Married event that we host, this event with Black Debonairs. There is a domestic violence event that I'm a part of, and it's all under the hood of infotainment. Like, we're in Atlanta, right? So this is a pocket for everything. As far as entertainment and how you see things move, it's coming from Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So we're embarking on a new idea of infotainment, to where we're giving you something that's worth chewing on, and we're entertaining you while we're doing it.
Right on. That's, you know, well, you know, that's a good thing, because, you know, a lot of our people They don't want to be talked to. They don't want to be preached to. They just want to be entertained. Well, here's a good way to get those messages across to some of our people who, although I believe that the people who attend your programs already have a level of understanding and consciousness, but still, they may bring somebody who, you know, okay, right, I'll go with you. And so now, here it is, they're being informed as well as being entertained. And somehow we need that. But truly, we do need to be informed, you know. That's an issue and a problem because a lot of us lack that understanding and information. That's why some of us still believe that somehow, some way we can use moral persuasion on this country and they can begin to see us as human beings, see us as humans and people, and we have with every right that any and everybody else has. You know, I think that's a constant, right, you know, mistake on our part, you know, and we always fall victim to that. And the bottom line is we need our own and we need to do for ourselves. We need to do for ourselves. We've been begging, hoping, praying, marching, all of these things for generations. And yet, our condition, and if you really look at our condition, is worse today than it has been. Yes, there are some brothers and sisters who are doing well economically. Yes, there are some brothers and sisters who are in positions. We have more elected officials than we've ever had, you know. But yet and still, our situation is not good because we rely on a people in this system and who just can't stand us. That's just a fact. But we don't want to deal with that reality because we've always been trained to believe that in humanity, you know, and to believe in God and the God of humanity and everybody's a brother and a sister, whatever. You know, you can preach that stuff. You can preach that stuff, but it doesn't deal, you know, with the facts. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're fine. You're laying it out. You're laying it out, and that's the biggest thing. Like we continue to look to make them who we are.
Yeah, yeah.
We give them the benefit of the doubt as if they are us, and they are not. Like they've shown us throughout history that they are not, regardless of what we gave them, regardless of how we taught them, regardless. I just mentioned earlier that I was in the military. And it's easy to get into spaces like that before I learned that all of these different warrior aspects, they learned it from us, mm-hmm, right? And they created a system of military behind that. But it's easy to get into that space where I'm doing well, so why are my brothers and sisters not doing well? Or they're making the choice not to do well. Like, you can really easily get into that space, and it almost got me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It almost got me. But due to digging in and getting that knowledge itself and sticking to that program, our program, that I learned that, hey, this is the trick, and it's a well-planned-out trick, mm-hmm, to separate us, to have some of us doing well, and then to have us take that idea and turn it on our people as if they have a choice in the matter when the system says differently.
Right. Yeah, you blame ourselves. You blame the victim of the system.
Right.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah. Yeah, that's right, because you could have been in, or you were in, corporate America.
Yes.
You know.
You're doing very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
doing very well. So I speak to that often with our youth and our young men that are in corporate America. The moment that you're called to the table to have to give of your soul to do something that's unnatural, because mm-hmm, our spirit tells us we are guided very well by our ancestors, whether we know it or not. And we get these inklings that may not be a good idea to go against your own nature. But that shiny penny, I like to call it.
Okay.
That shiny penny gets us.
Mm-hmm.
and you start to justify. No, well, I'm doing it. They can do it too.
Right. Yeah. Many have that attitude. I'm doing it. Why can't they do it? You know, shoot, it's there for you. It ain't the system. It's you, you know.
Right.
Because I got mine. I got mine. You get yours, you know. Yeah.
Right, which is the very vein that capitalism and the Eurocentric thought thrives off of.
Mm-hmm.
That idea. So I got mine, you get yours. What about the raping and the pillaging and all of that stuff you did to get yours?
Mm-hmm.
What about the dishonesty? See, we have to talk about all of these things, not just some of them. Yeah, what about the slavery? So again, going back to what we're going to be doing this Saturday, it's about us acknowledging self. It's about us celebrating our greatness and bringing more into that space. My event, all of my events are about the folks that are conscious, but it's also not just preaching to the choir. Like, it's folks that are in the beginning space of consciousness. We welcome those folks in. We love on those people. You know, we make sure not to turn them off based on where they are in their journey, but we look to elevate them into a greater space.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we do what we do.
Well, you know, your programs in terms of infotainment is vitally important and necessary at this time, because a lot of times just providing the information, some of us may not want to gravitate to that, but then when entertainment comes in, we want to hear the spoken word, we want to hear the singing and the dancing and drumming and dance. But we're also now, because of that, we're also receiving that information, and in some times, in some ways, and somehow, it changes our thinking, it changes our perspective, and we begin to look at things differently, and that's the part that is so important that you play, you know. Helping to shape the minds of our people.
Absolutely. We're powerful. We just have to dig in. And that changes the hold that the system has on you. And I'm living proof of that.
Mm-hmm.
We can use certain things as leverage, and then the rest of it, we have to throw it away for the benefit of our people.
Yeah, because all of it good, believe me. You know, that's the thing.
Right.
Being able to decipher what is good. Just like you say, all money ain't good money, you know.
That's
and,
it.
Yeah, you know, and so we need to understand, for us as a people, we need to be that example, you know, of warriors, of men and women who challenge this system, and they don't back down, and they help us. Showing us the way. We need to do that. I mean, we have some good guides in this community, you know, Baba Baruti, Mrema Ani, Mama Nabantu, so many, Brother Mukasa. There's so many good brothers and sisters. You know, I'm involved in organizations, you know, involved with groups.
Yeah, yourself now. We can't leave you out of that now. We got to put you in there too, fam.
Well, I appreciate the acknowledgement, and I appreciate you presenting this and bestowing this upon me. And humbly, I agree. I appreciate it, man. But I agree that I'm trying my best to do my part, whatever that part I can play, to help liberate the minds of our people, to bring that knowledge of self to our people, and to change the behavior of us and how we look at ourselves. Because I know, and you know, that even though we talking about how the police kill us, but don't nobody kill us the way we kill us, you know. And
right.
there is no other people on the planet, no other cultural group on the planet that kills themselves as much as we do. And it's not just here. It's not just here in America. It is global. Because of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, better known as white supremacy, this is a global phenomenon where white supremacy has made us turn inwardly to hate ourselves, to hate the way we look, to hate our hair and our nose, our skin, our lips. you know, and hate others that look like us. This is what Dr. Amos Wilson was talking about. In fact, Baba Rudy on Facebook had a nice good quote from Blueprint from Black Power, Dr. Amos Wilson's book, you know, and, you know, that's just a reality. We, you know, this is a very tough time for us. That's why programs that you put on are necessary, not just to entertain us, of course, and to inform us, but to get us to be more social, to help us know who's in our community and have respect for one another, you know, and to share with one another. You know, it's a collective. You know, that's our thing, is that, you know, here in America, brother, as you know, Brother Sincere, individualism, they perpetuate and promote individualism because that's what capitalism is about, individualism. And individualism is a European, Caucasian, or white desire. You know, I think, therefore, right. I am, you know. But collectivism is an African imperative. It is a must. It is seriously needed. We are a collective people. I use that. I know when you have that thread that we, you know, when we wake each other up in the morning, you know, great grand rising and so forth. And then people say Ubuntu. Well, Ubuntu means together, pulling together, together. You know, I always tell a story. And you seen that picture where the African children all have their feet together in that circle, you know, in that circle. That's Ubuntu. Tell the story of the Caucasian on the continent. He's saying, oh, I want you kids to run a race from this point to that tree. And the first one that gets there, I'll give you this big basket of goodies or whatever, you know. And surprisingly to him, all the children ran there together. And he said, no. The first one that gets here said, no. Ubuntu. We are together. And so that collectivism is what made us great as a people from antiquity to this present day. But of course, that togetherness is constantly being fragmented and challenged. And many of our people, you know, some of us don't want to be us. Some of us definitely don't want to be together. Some of us believe that if it's inherently us, all us, that it's inherently inferior or bad or no good because of the fact that these folks have put something on our minds. And what they've put on our minds is self-hatred, you know, and alienation from the fact of who we are. So that's why this program that you do and the things that you do are vitally important. And I appreciate you acknowledging what I do in terms of doing this on a daily or every other day, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday basis, and other programs too that are here on Time for an Awakening Radio, you know, and we need it, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. It's time.
Yeah.
It's absolutely time. Brother, I know you will continue to do what you do, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you in the space with these young men and young boys, so we can introduce our elders and people that are doing the work to our youth.
That's great.
Like, we're building the bridge, and that's our job.
Yes, I like that, because that is necessary for us. I know in this society, you know, there's that so-called intergenerational gap. But in African society, there is no intergenerational gap. It is the elders, those who are running things, the parents, and then there's the youngsters, there's the youth. And all of that is together. All of that is together. But see, in Western society, once you get older, you kind of kick to the curb. You know, I haven't seen this too much. Maybe I just I've missed it, but I did see it at one restaurant at the Beautiful, where you have a group of elder men. I'm talking about a decent number, sometimes anywhere between 5 to 15 older men. And they're just there, you know, they've retired or whatever. And they're, you know, having coffee or having breakfast or whatever, you know? And, so nobody asked them anything, you know? Nobody asked them their opinion. It's just like they don't exist. that they owe, they out to pasture, you know? And it's sad because in African society, they are valued and their opinions are valued, their wisdom is valued, but they're valued as a person who has lived a life, you know? And for those coming up that they, you want information about things that you don't make the same mistakes that somebody else made, you know? You don't go that way. So that's why, to me, that intergenerational gap is, you know, what you're talking about is going to be closed because we need each other. We need each other in terms of male and female. We need each other in terms of infancy, youth, adults, and elders. We need all of that. Yeah.
Yes, that is absolute fact. That's absolute fact. Yeah. So that's what we're doing in terms, more so than just talking about it, is galvanizing the people, having these conversations, utilizing the wisdom that we have. Because we won't always have it in certain circumstances. Like, we all have a specific amount of time to be here.
Yeah.
So we have to take advantage of what we have while we have it.
I say. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. And that's like some people, you know, particularly when you're young, you'll think you'll live forever, you know, and you're a lot more carefree. You don't understand that time is precious, and you need to continue to do things that will help you keep healthy and keep you sustaining your life here in a good mental health, you know, and good physical health. You know, I'm almost 70. And, you know, and I know I have more years behind me than I have ahead of me, but by the same token, I'll continue to be in a fight. You know, that's why, you know, even though at the event the other day when I was going to ask, you know, what I usually do and ask for permission to speak before I do a libation, you know, and I know I'm the oldest person in the room, so I understand that. But many times in social events, there are elders who have stood the test of time and who are still out here dealing with issues like Baba McKelsey, Dr. Kelsey, Mariba Kelsey. He's a prime example, just a beautiful man. He's 90, I want to say 94, somewhere around. He might even be older than that now, you know. And
wow.
He's still, yeah, oh yeah, and he's great, man. He's still functioning. He's still sharp. He's still presenting. He's still talking about issues and so forth. And you know, and there's a few other elders who I consider esteemed elders because of their consistent involvement with trying to help our people, trying to change the conditions of our situation, you know. And those men and women truly always must be recognized and given their props because of their constant involvement. And but to recognize me is I'm very humbled by that, brother, and very appreciative by that, man. I really am, brother, sincere.
Yes, sir. We have to do this work. We have to do this work, Bubba. Yeah. And you talking about some of your elders and some of the esteemed elders in the community reminds me of a charge that I received a number of years ago where my elders told me, they sat me down. It was about four of them. And they said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, what do you mean? What am I going to do? You know, at this time, I'm running as a poet and I'm, you know, I'm hitting all of these great stages and platforms and so forth and so on. I said, well, what are you going to do? And I just really didn't understand. So they broke it down to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wordplay is great. Being a poet is great. Being a speaker is great.
Right.
But what are you going to do? You know, and they broke down to me, our time is coming to an end. And they said something similar to what you just said. You know, I have more days behind me than in front of me. It's going to be your job.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you going to do? If you don't have the answer now, that's fine. We'll help you come up with the answer. But we want you to think about what you're going to do because it's going to be your job.
Right. That's right. That's right. Listen, I'm going to take a break. You stay with us if you can. Okay, Brother Sincere?
And, absolutely.
All right. And then hopefully joining me will also be Brother Bomani Taihemba for Africans for the Africans. He recently returned from Senegal and Gambia. He has a trip upcoming to Ghana, then to Tanzania, and then back to Ghana again, and then next year back to Senegal and Gambia. You know, he's doing great work on the continent. Talked to him about what's happening in Ghana in terms of finding an area of land that you can be a part of and be part of a community there. So all of these good things. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Down in a braid, brothers with their afros taking center stage, watching as this culture slowly comes of age with a mind of its own. Yeah, mothers out in the yard hanging up her clothes, fathers playing with the kids, keeping them on the go. Neighborhoods beating on the heart of its soul, and that's where my feelings live. 'Cause I love my people the way they let it go on the dance floor. Ain't nobody gonna do it like us, no. I'm loving my people. Straight to the kitchen table. My heart's full of love, spirits in the flow, and I'm loving my people. Teachers off in the classroom giving up the love, supported by that mom and dad who want that special touch. Little acts of kindness prove to mean so much when we give what we know. Kitchen pots are banging, smell of soul food fills the air. You walk past the neighbor's house wishing you had dinner there. Better times for living when people seem to care about that place where they grow. That's why I love my people the way they let it go on a dance floor. Ain't nobody gonna do it like us, no. I'm loving my people. Said I love my people. I love. So from the stove straight to the kitchen table. My heart's full of love, spirits in the flow. That I'm loving my people. Folks gather at the church on a Sunday morn. Openly they sing and praise and gospel music's born. God gave us love enough with spirits free to run. Why can't we learn to love ourselves like we're the chosen one? Come and let me know how your life is doing good. Tell me how the blessings flow through the neighborhood. Share with me that time of feelings understood in that place we call home. 'Cause I love my people the way they let it go on the dance floor. Ain't nobody gonna do it like us, no. Said that I'm loving mine. stove, straight to the kitchen table. My heart's full of love, spirits in the flow, and I'm loving my people. Kitchen table. Can't nobody do it like us now. I'm loving my people. Say that I'm loving my. I love. I'm loving my.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. I have my guest, Brother Bomani Tayemba. Are you there, my brother?
Yes, sir. Greetings, Oshie. I'm right here.
All right. And I also have Brother Sincere. Are you still with me? Brother Sincere?
Absolutely, family. I'm still here with you.
Right on. All right, I'm going to talk to Brother Bomani, and if you have any questions, brothers and sisters, or particularly you, Brother Sincere, you can always ask those. And for those who are already on the queue, all you have to do is press star twice, and you can get in on this conversation, or dial once again, 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Brother Bomani, how you been, man?
Yes, brother. I've been well. Doing business and on the move.
I know you are doing business and on the move. Yes, sir. So, how was the trip to Senegal and Gambia?
Senegal and Gambia roots tour. Another wonderful journey where we reconnected with our ancestral heritage and just made our way around the country, networking, connecting, and just. Introducing people to a full roots tour where you're visiting historical places, museums, and so on. So that was beautiful, and we was able to document everything.
Are those photos and DVD and photos and videos on up yet?
Yes, they're online.
Online.
And anyone that's interested in looking at the information can access us from our website, Africa. For the Africans.org. And once you're on our website, the main menu, you'll see all our social pages and things like that. And all information is shareable. So you're on the popular commercial networks that's out there, YouTube, Facebook, where you find most of our people. So put them up there so people can access them so they can see our perspective on our connection to Africa and what it looked like and how we feel that connection versus viewing Africa through the lens of oppressive networks that tend to be more biased than anything else.
I agree. And that's why I really promote Africa for the Africans every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I make mention about what Africa for the Africans is doing, the places they're going, the fact that if you go to their website, everything you need to take a trip of a lifetime, the information is there. Where to get the documents you need, the visa you might need, the shots you might need, whatever it is, all that information is there. And he has a trip to Ghana, May 24th to June 5th. He has a trip to Tanzania, November 18th through the 29th. He has another Ghanaian trip coming up December 24th to January 5th, 2022. And then he has another trip to Senegal and Gambia, April 1st to April 11th of next year. And I'm quite sure there'll be even more. And how many people have you taken to Africa in all these years? You roughly
say? Yeah, altogether, just a little bit under 500 people on many different trips. It can be total to about, if we want to do the math, about over 20-something different journeys. Some of them have combined countries. So, but I've been doing these journeys from 2006, so 15, coming from 15 years December.
Yeah. Beautiful.
And about an average usually about 20 people. But yes, just a little bit under 500 people over the period of time. And some of them also have been on multiple journeys.
Yeah. Well, I'm quite sure they appreciate it, because when you look at the photos, they look, you got nice venues, nice hotels, everything looks safe and everything like that. And so, and I might add, affordable. I mean, if you talking right here, right now, all these are $3,700 per person. You put a down payment down, you pay on it monthly or whatever, and by the time you know it, you didn't have to drop a big wad of cash down. You were able to pay for this over a period of time, and now you're ready to go, you know?
And yes, and it's that's simple. And it's and everything is going to have its cost. So you tell everybody to pace yourself. If you're looking to go, just do your best to get most out of your investment as possible. I always recommend, if anyone is traveling with us, to stay longer in the specific country, and they can also fly to another country and they can just get more. And then they can also get more of a local feel. So sometimes people want to know why tours are not that long. It's you're doing tourism, so you're paying for the higher cost of factor. You stay in the hotels, you're eating gourmet meals and so on, and you have a tour staff and you have your bus rentals and things like that. So the 8 to 10 days that we do the journey flows with the price scale, and then once you stay longer, you can get you a basic hotel or stay with a friend or stay with one of the people that we recommend, and you can just do some additional relaxing in the country and things like that. So that's what makes it a complete journey. And every country that we have, we go to, we have a lot, you know, we have more than enough people in that country to get you connected with, to make sure you feel safe and make sure you're good and things like that.
Yeah, because that's important. I mean, because, you know, unfortunately, I've heard of situations where brothers and sisters who are just in a small group, you know, even the authorities, the so-called police, may stop you, harass you, or even, you know, try to get money from you, you know. And it's unfortunate, but that happens, you know. And so, but, to me, I've been fortunate, particularly in when I've been going to Ghana, I'm connected with the firefighters, you know, and established that relationship way back in the 90s. And so when I go to Ghana, you know, they pick me up at the airport and they take me to my place where I'm going to stay or whatever and help me along to make these connections. And that's a good thing. And I understand what you're saying as well, Brother Bomani. That's a good thing when you can connect with the local people and not just be a tourist, you know. In fact, I don't consider myself a tourist when I go to Africa. I basically feel I'm going home, and I look towards meeting people and seeing how things operate and seeing what's going on in whatever particular location. One trip I'm definitely interested in, and I know you went last year, is it's pronounced Tanzania, but people pronounce it Tanzania, right?
Yes, it's Tanzania, and it can be pronounced Tanzania as we pronounce it in America, and pronounced another way. But those are the two popular ones. How we pronounce it here in America, Tanzania, and then more so there, Tanzania, to say.
So it should be Tanzania.
Tanzania.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tanzania. So that's the thing. That's more the closest one. But they're usually not too far off.
Mm-hmm. So what's happening what's happening as far as you're concerned, as far as you know, in terms of the pandemic that is going across the world, how? Because I know there are some people, and that fact that one person and him and his wife they canceled with you because of the pandemic. Because I had been telling him about Africa for the Africans, and then he had scheduled and made a down payment and was going to go to Ghana. And then because of the pandemic, and I understand the fear, you know, but what's happening on the continent as it relates to the pandemic? In all the places that you've been, of course, I'm asking, you know, to the places that you have been, how is it going?
Everything is that people are moving forward with their life. The only thing that's going on is it has slowed business down and slowed down the flow of tourism, which flow into other people getting less of the money they used to get or less access to opportunities. So there's definitely been a crippling of the economy in the different countries that I've been to, Senegal, Gambia, Ghana, Tanzania. And the other country that we had on the list was South Africa. I can imagine it going there because that was a big tourist destination. And I think they should be finally open now, but it took them a long time to reopen their country. And they lost a lot of business to other countries. So those things are also going on. People are moving forward with their lives and trying to wear the mask and follow basic procedures just to, you know, go along to get along.
Yeah.
South Africa
was having a serious outbreak of it wasn't the outbreak of COVID-19 was not happening on the continent. There were spots on the continent where it was happening. Egypt was one. South Africa was another. Some of the places that you go to, it was happening, but very minimal. Am I correct?
Yes, absolutely. Very minimal to say that. And most of the situations that goes on are usually like malaria type situation, but yes, very minimal. And you can go to villages that you ask people if they lost any loved ones to certain things, and they're gonna tell you no. So it gets a little tricky, but for the most part, the numbers are gonna be very low in Africa for many different reasons, and now people are, you know, living and doing well, and it's always a trip because if I go to a nightclub, I go somewhere and no one wears a mask and it's like hundreds of people together.
Wow.
But in the daytime, it's like a little different people, you know. So that's the part that's always hilarious. Even though I was in Tanzania on Zanzibar Island, there's a full moon party and it was at least 500 people just out there on the beach at the resort partying. So. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, it's no one can really get their hand on it and things like that. But unfortunately, we do have to take COVID tests. So, once you have a negative COVID test result within 3 days, you can get on your next flight and move to your next country. So that's the only thing that's a little frustrating. So, and then some countries, when you get there, you have to take it one again.
So you would have to take a COVID test here in the States, right? Before you got on the plane to go to wherever, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Now, I heard there are COVID tests that you can get a result back immediately, but that's not the case of what you're talking about. Because usually, go ahead.
It's a PCR test, a little more extensive, but usually that's something you get back within 1 to 2 days. Mm-hmm. And most places in the U.S., you can get it for free. And when you're literally coming back and you're in a specific country, like when you go to Ghana, you have to take one. It's $50. You pay ahead of time.
$50 from Ghana. $50 U.S.?
$50 U.S.
Mm, wow. Okay.
And they have to take their test. And when you're leaving to come back, it depends on the airlines, because it really depends on the airlines. For the most part, the airlines that we take, which is usually Delta and KLM, to fly to Ghana and back, we have to take a COVID test. So that's been one of the things that's thrown people off, and you lose people that normally travel with you, you know, because the last set of groups that I have, usually you more than likely have twice as much instead of the numbers you have, but you just got to keep moving forward with it. So it's affected in many markets and things like that. And some people are really paranoid, but it seems like people are taking the vaccination, which is their business. I never really know what to say about vaccination and things like that. Other than that, I'm not really down with being experimented on. But other than that, and, you know, the usual things, you know, when you have a lot of people take any kind of vaccination, you're going to have different issues with some percentage of the people who are going to have reaction to it. So I don't know. It's weird stuff. I'm still trying to get my mind on this whole COVID stuff. It's been a whole year of just being just traumatized with it. But I've been doing my best to work with it and moving forward in business. And just letting everybody know that some way or another, they're going to have to find a way to cope with it. Because yeah. I have some people who say they're not leaving this country, not going anywhere. They're not taking nobody tests. They're not taking no vaccination. But you're going to have to take something to move from one location
yes,
to the next.
Yes, you do. Yeah, you do. Oh, we got a caller. We have a caller. 602. Good afternoon.
Yes, Brother Oshi. Good afternoon. And good afternoon, Brother Bamani. And Brother Punait on the line. Brother Marcus here.
Hey, Brother Marcus. Brother, go ahead.
Brother Bamani, let me ask you two questions. If you take the shot, do you still have to take the COVID test to travel? And the
yes.
next question is, oh yeah, you still have to, if you take the shot, you still have to take the test?
Yes, because the requirement to travel is not the vaccination. The requirement to travel is the test.
Right. Anyway,
one person tried to pull that off, and he got to the country a day late. So I explained that to everyone. We go by the requirements.
Yeah,
and then the vaccination depends on when you get it. It still needs to be in your body for a while because it's an experiment. So,
okay, let me ask you another question because I saw you on YouTube with Goham and the Bag family in the Gambia. You guys look like you were having fun, but let me ask you a question. Compared to Ghana. Could you give me a little pros and cons between Ghana and Gambia? And I'll mute my phone and listen to your response. Thank you, Boman.
Yes, absolutely. I can give you a quick, yeah. As far as Gambia, I do like the Gambia. I've always liked it since I went there in 2006. I thought it was a much slower, more laid-back pace. And things, you know, naturally, in that case, is going to be less developed. But Ghana is light years of just every other country as far as when it comes to repatriation, Pan-Africanism, and you know, and things like that, and investing in the country. Their country is more structured, and they've had more of a consistent government. So that they've been benefited from that for the last 30-something years. And so that's one thing as for Ghana. But as far as just the Gambia, you can just easily look at it as the more of us go there and network, connect, it becomes a better place for investments because now we can invest, you know, things a little less expensive. Ghana is a lot more expensive now as far as land and things like that. So the comparison I'm giving you, I'm not trying to say like Ghana 10 years ahead of the Gambia, but in some cases we can look at it that way and look at it that way, especially as far as, but people have been going to the Gambia just as long as they've been going to Ghana. Ghana's probably one of those countries where people have been living and going there a little bit longer and has benefited from that energy. So the countries I have on the list is to connect us to countries where we can live and do business and network with those of us that are there. So it becomes up to the individual what they're looking for and are they willing to spend more money and live with that, deal with the higher cost in Ghana or less in the Gambia? And are they willing to put more work into connecting with so many other people and developing aspects of the Gambia where, you know, more things can just be in place because it has the potential and things like that. So those are the two biggest things that I would compare it with. But, you know, ultimately it has the same thing to the African Holocaust. Ghana has Elmina and Cape Coast Holocaust dungeons. The Gambia has Jufri and Ebreda, and also Kunta Kinte Island, which is formerly known as James Island. So you can reconnect to the African Holocaust and African ancestors, which I feel like is always a good pilgrimage connection to do in the countries that we go to. And that's what I have on all four itineraries that we have. And, you know, to really just complete and give you a balance of the journey as far as this, us having a wonderful experience in Africa.
What about Tanzania?
I would say it would be a lot closer to Ghana, but there's other things that need to be defined as far as like citizenship, and that's the one advantage, like one of the biggest advantages that Ghana has. You can get a, you can get your residency process quick within a few weeks to a few months, and then get citizenship within relatively fast now in a faster procedure, and get it more closer to 1 to 3 years or 2 to 3 years based on the process that you use in Ghana and things like that. And we have designated people that work on these things, and we have a separate citizenship conference along with separate business and investment conference in Ghana. That's how much connections that we have, so we're able to offer a lot more. And we're going to be doing the same in other countries as time goes along.
So what, you know, what you're doing is much more than just giving a tour. You're setting up repatriation. You're setting up investments. You're helping our brothers and sisters not just to experience a trip of a lifetime, but hopefully that the rest of your life you can be living in an African country, in a country that is stable, a country that affords you comforts and so forth, you know.
Exactly. That's always the game plan. Sometimes people look at things different, and I just, you know, I let them have what they want to look at it as. But it's, you know, you have to be tactical in this world today. Like, you know, you can't just be out there just like yelling and screaming and then going off about certain things. And you know, and it's, you know, you have to sometimes take a certain market approach, especially if you're trying to get the right people into Africa. So you're trying to get more people to do business and investment. So the ideal thing is, you know, is market the country, market it from the ground up, find something to market the country with. And that's what I was telling some of my brothers that was connecting to like Sierra Leone and Liberia, that, you know, people can say whatever they want to say about Ghana, but it's ideal to take some of you know, 'cause Ghana is just another country in Africa that has similar things as far as West Africa, as far as stolen African energy and been through some of the trauma of civil war and things like that. But it's like, it's a unique country right there on the, right there off the Atlantic Ocean. And we, and you just got to build it up little by little, and you can't really wait for the Ministry of Tourism and government departments like that. So I just remember Ghana being one way, and little by little, you know, you show one Africa, you show a few things, and next thing you know, it's just become a more popular country, and then other people start doing the same and things like that.
Well, I hope that continues with other countries being welcoming of our brothers and sisters here and throughout the diaspora in terms of going home. Because, see, I'm a staunch Pan-Africanist, and I believe that Africa should, you know, be united. I believe that Ghana and all the other countries should be united as one, and we should be able to control the land and the resources and everything about it, and we should be able to develop infrastructure that is so vitally necessary and needed. That's what's one of the things, I know I've talked to you about this, Brother Bomani, that kind of disappointed me to some degree about Ghana, since I've been going there since the 90s. There's still issues with infrastructure, you know, and some other things, you know. Are you still planning on developing a like a subdivision or an area within Ghana where brothers and sisters can move to?
Oh, yes, absolutely. That is my future investment. I've put my money where my mouth is. We're looking to just do corporate economics at its finest and build us a Black Power community that it's more of a business community, and it's based on sustainable development and also just aspects of research and development as far as this using different components with, you know, sustainable utilities and things like that. So, creating the community as a center for this advanced technical and business education training and things like that, as we begin to get more of us empowered and get us more on a level of understanding how to use the technology and to work business and provide services and support to the rest of the world, and market ourselves just like any other conglomerate or corporate enterprise. So basically, putting no limitation on it, And especially with the investment part of it, because we're close to a beach, real nice beach 2 miles away. And that beach with proper investment could look just as nice as, you know, some of the nicer beaches in the area that, you know, when you develop the area and you add certain things to it, it becomes a nice little beach town. So that's the good thing of it. And you're about an hour and a half away from Accra, so the people can get away and have a nice little peace and just enjoy a beautiful, nice little town. So we have that aspect of it to develop and things like that. So it makes it a lifetime project. And yeah. Go ahead.
Are you west of Accra?
East, west, sometimes I get lost in these things. We're about an hour and a half away from our Cape Coast, an hour and a half away from Accra. So you're more in the middle of Accra and Cape
so
Coast.
So you're almost like, what is that? It'll come to me. But I know Winneba.
Basically, you're close to Winneba.
Close to Winneba. Yeah. Because my first time to Ghana, I stayed in Winneba and met some beautiful people at a place that was a resort probably when the British were there. And I kept looking at this place and I kept saying, like, man, if they could put in, you know, some serious money to make this a real nice resort, and that you could have some buses that would pick people up, you know, at the airport in Accra and drive them to this nice resort where they can chill out and relax and let that be their point of departure. And they can go to Accra to shop. They can go to Kumasi. They could go to Cape Coast and Elmina Dungeons. You know, they can go to Tikrati. They could go wherever, you know, from that particular spot. It'd be a nice area, resort area, you know. But what you're planning to do is to build a community with homes and so forth, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And build this, all the things you need in a community, and make it self-sufficient.
Right. See, I would love for something like that that would have some good infrastructure, that would, you know, have good electricity, Wi-Fi, you know.
That's the purpose of it, to build something independent from the grid, independent from the system. So when people mm-hmm. don't have, if your neighbors may not have water, electricity, or internet, but you would have. Those technologies are available from what they're using. More satellite system to get your internet, mm-hmm. and you have your backup generator power and your solar system. So, and these things are very effective now. So, you know, we're doing research and development to find the best products and products to use. And from there on, our goal is to be experts at these things based on the initial research and work that we're doing.
Outstanding. System Mama Nabantu, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, brothers, and good to hear Bamani talk about what's going on with his trips and travels. And
great, sister.
Yes, good hearing you. I just want to know, I know there's other folks there that are doing some work around what you're doing, and I just wonder if there's any connection, like what's the difference between what you're doing and what Habesha's doing, because I know they got solar infrastructure on their headquarters, and they're also talking about building a sustainable community as well as Sister Sharita. So I'm just wondering, is there any connection with any of you in terms of what's going on?
Yeah, all the individuals are doing projects. I know them directly. The reason people are doing these similar projects is because we have wisened up as a people. I understand the best thing to do is find a group of people and for us to put our energy together and, you know, do group economic as far as investment, and be able to just provide those of us that are part of that project more resource and more connection. So that's why it's and, you know, that's why more people are doing it, because they're also seeing that individuals are going there and it's not really working out for some people. Some people just have the connections and the resources like that to survive one or two hits. But some people really need to put what they have together with other people and make it work so they can, you know, have a nice living accommodations, and they can kind of look out for each other and get into the mix of the culture by being more organized. Because when you run around the country and you're spinning your wheels, you may run into frustration and things like that. So it's a positive thing, and I'm looking to, you know, connect with more people on it. But at the same time, what we're looking to do is just build something that's unique to the members that are with us, and taking it to this, you know, a level of no limitations, and ultimately just being, you know, being a group of people that are ready to invest their resources with others to build whatever we need to build as a people. So that's the ultimate thing I'm looking to for us to do. And the more established that we are and others are, the more we can literally combine resources and do the other things that we want to do. Because when we're looking at the major market of the Indians, the Chinese, they're doing more of like bigger industrial projects, probably that we can get to that level and do. But for now, that's who's doing them. Because every country I go to, you have this other group, whether it's the Lebanese in this country, whether it's other groups in here and there. It's just always, you know, the others. And sometimes there's multiple groups there. And literally by us getting to a certain level, we can even compete on a higher level because we're dealing with people that are backed by entire countries. You know? So that's what I'm looking at in the long run.
Right. Thank you for that explanation. How far is your community that you're working on from where Habashai is?
I would say they're probably in the eastern region, and along with another group that I know in the eastern region. And that could easily be about three to 4 hours from us and things like that. And and we're probably both about, they're probably around 2 hours away from Accra, and we're about an hour and a half away from Accra. So that's the central point there. But they're probably closer to the lake, Lake Volta, but we are right there by the Atlantic Ocean, about 2 miles away. That's also, we're looking to do many other things with that as far as working with other people, because that's what it's going to take to develop that beach area.
Okay, is that near Amacus?
That's about an hour and a half away from One Africa, Amacus.
What about
Elmina, and we're closer to Winneba.
Okay, is that close to where Jerry Johnson is?
No, Jerry Johnson is. Yeah, he's
Jerry's
way on the east.
To where Abishai would be, but they're in Tema, and Tema is about. It's about 45 minutes away from our hotel in Accra.
Okay.
That puts them about 2.5 hours away from us.
Okay. All right. I've got my answers. Thank you.
All right, sister. All right, Mama Nabantu. Thank you.
All right, Doug. Good talking with you.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah. You know, to do what you're doing, brother, I admire and respect you tremendously. And because what you're doing is you're showing, you're letting brothers and sisters see, because a lot of times people talk about stuff. You don't talk about it, you be about it. You're letting them see firsthand, you know, what's going on in various countries. You know, and how many countries have you had a tour to?
Yes, out of the 10 countries I've been to, I've done tours to 7 of them.
Okay.
And Ghana, Togo, Benin, Senegal and Gambia, and South Africa and Tanzania.
Okay.
So those are the 7 countries. And the countries I've been to that I have not done any tours to, or it wasn't my tour, was Ethiopia, Egypt, and also Kenya. So those are my 10 countries in Africa.
Kenya, I'm kind of, you know, like to go to Kenya. Like to go to, you know, the Nairobi and Mombasa and visit Kenya. But is Kenya experiencing some disablement, or is it everything is pretty much cool in Kenya? Because I've heard some things. Do you know?
It's one of those things where I can never tell you, man. It's so many countries, and it's always drama. And in most countries, it's always some kind of drama. But it's usually nothing major. That's the good thing about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, that's why, you know, Mama Nabantu, she is one of the directors here of the Pan-African Federalist Movement. And the whole point of the Pan-African Federalist Movement is to unite Africa. You know, there is no doubt about it that the future for us as African people lies in United Africa, where those of us who are in the diaspora, who understand that here in America, wherever we might be, we're not treated with any dignity and any respect. We're always at the low end of the economic rung. But with a united Africa, we could do what we want to do on the continent or anywhere else in the diaspora, because we know we have a place to go. We can command respect because we know that we have a homeland. We have a home continent. We have, and not only that, a united Africa could provide for the future for African people in terms of jobs and technology and all those things, you know. But if we continue to waste time, which is very important, because the time that is wasted, when you talk about the Chinese are talking about putting 300 million people, in Ghana, I mean, in Africa, rather. 300 million people in Africa. They're going to continue. Africa won't be for Africans. Africa will be for, you know, the Chinese and any and everybody else. The Europeans have never left. The Europeans are still there. You know, are still there. The Indians, you know, they're there. So, I mean, we have a number of things that we're fighting against, and unfortunately fighting amongst ourselves. You know, there has to be a moment, and this is the time and the moment that we put away all these superficial disagreements and arguments and tribalism and all these other things to come together to unify us as African people, you know. Because it's not just about, because Kwame Nkrumah, of course, you know, Kwame Nkrumah said it the first time that Africa gained independence from Britain was Ghana. And he said it at the very beginning, that we must unite as Africans. It's not about Ghana or Cameroon or Kenya or Tanzania. It's about Africa. And if we don't do this, we'll lose. We'll lose big time. And not only that, we will lose by elimination, by extermination, you know. This is very serious time for us. Brother Sincere, are you there? Brother Sincere, are you still there with us? Do you have any questions?
Absolutely. I had an opportunity to connect with the brother on the West End. Bomani, peace and love to you. I love what you're doing, and we spoke about that, and I have some material. He's definitely somebody I'll be connecting with.
Yeah, brother, I do remember connecting with you, our brother Ross Isis. I do remember us doing that show. That was good networking.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Absolutely, man. We'll be connecting sooner than later. Absolutely.
All right. All right. And
our excellent network.
Yeah. And that's what we need. We need to expand our network, but more importantly, we need the action, and we need the people who can, you know, some, as the saying goes, movers and shakers, if that's a good, of people who will definitely make a situation much better for us. 602, Brother Marcus.
Yes, Brother Oshi. Brother Boma, let me ask you another question. being that the runoff of a different current over there in Africa, right? I think they run off at 220. They don't run on the same cycle as America. America on a 50 cycle, I think they're on 60 cycle. Would you recommend bringing in, like, some generators, you know, them little portable generators, power saw, power or chainsaws, because I notice them little things over there, them people don't have. You know, they get products from China, but they don't last. They go to the weed walker work 3 months, brand new weed walker, then you got to get rid of it. So would you recommend bringing in those little things that can run off generators too, a U.S. generator, because again, it's a different cycle, but it's running off a U.S. generator and you're running that tool, you shouldn't have a problem. Would you recommend bringing in things like that into the country to help, you know, spur employment? Because that's jobs. You know? People could hire people to go clean up, you know, cut grass or cut down the forest or whatever the hell, land clearing. Is that a good business you would recommend, Brother Bowman?
Yeah, honestly, things dealing with heavy machines and anything, you know, heavy machines and heavy equipment is ideal. You're talking about a developing continent where, you know, where like example, our community, we need land clear, we need trenches dig, we need all those equipment, and then other people are doing the same thing also, and then because what we're doing now is, you know, what you call rural development. You're investing resources in the greater market now, which is the rural part of the different countries in Africa. And so that becomes a major factor. And as a matter of fact, that's one of the things that we need in our actual community, is being able to have heavy equipment so we can start getting to the industrial aspects of the community. Because as a matter of fact, not the community, the town, because the town is much bigger and the chief has land available for industrial development, but people want to bring in industry. So that's perfect.
Gotcha, brother. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Brother Marcus. Continue to hang on, bro. Yeah. You know, that's the thing, like I said, about we need development. We need to do that. But I'm looking at we need to do that. I know that when I went up to the northern region, up to Tamale, and a lot of construction going on in Tamale, and it's the Chinese. The Chinese also built a road from Tamale to Moli Park, you know, to the game preserve. Have you been up there to Moli Park?
No, I haven't been to Moli Park.
Okay. Have you been to Tamale?
No, I haven't been up to that part.
The northern
of the
region. North. Okay, that's yes, going up
to the Bronhofer region.
Right, Bronhofer. Okay. And so not only did they build a road from Tamale to Moli Park, they also built their own resort, which you could see higher up on a hill, you know, because the resort is high on the hill. In fact, when you go to it, you can look kind of look down and you can see, you know, animals coming to the creek, you know, antelope and elephants and so forth. And they built a resort even higher up with a road, you know, connecting there, you know. And I appreciate that, because I went to Moli Park before the road was built, and it was a treacherous drive, man, you know, with all those bumps and vibrations and the fact that felt like, you know, a corrugation when you are driving along and you're about to come to a stop or you're at the airport for you to slow down, boom, 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 you know. Imagine, you know, driving like that for a few hours. Yeah. So, I mean, I appreciate that, but I feel that, you know, what we need to do is do these things for ourselves instead of relying on entities outside of us, you know. I know that, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's Zambia. Zambia's airport was built by the Chinese, and Zambia couldn't pay. And so now the Chinese control and have ownership of their airport. And then not only did they do that, but they built a prison or a security force in that particular area. Do you know of that?
No, but it's not surprise or shock, but that's how investment work. You know, people end up owning your infrastructure and owning your country. You know, you can't just bring people in to build and design and do things. So we have to be careful about that also.
Yeah.
And be careful, you know, but if, you know, then don't fall for the bait.
Yeah. So, you know,
if people can offer you all kind of things, the things that you have, they can't offer you, you know, which is land and natural resources, but they can offer you all the, you know, the glamour and the glitter.
Right. You know, because I know that Africa has been blessed with resources in abundance. And even though Africa has been plundered for generations, no, excuse me, for centuries, yet it still has more resources than anywhere else. And it is a blessing for us as Africans, but of course, many of us don't want to be African and could care less about what happens in Africa, how it is ripped off, continues to be ripped off by the West and now the East. And that's why I'm saying that one of the most important things that we as Africans need to do at this particular stage of our existence is to form this Pan-African alliance, to form this Pan-African federalist movement and get Africans to, you know, to realize that it's not about being a Ghanaian or about being a Nigerian or Zimbabwean. It's about being Africa. You can keep those customs and traditions, and that's great. But to recognize there's nothing more important than one Africa, you know, about us controlling land and making sure that Africans have water, clean water, making sure that Africans have good shelter and clothing and so forth. Have you heard of the Ledge Group?
Yes, I'm familiar with the Ledge Group.
Yeah, and the work they're doing. They have, in fact, in Tanzania, they are offering a safari through a raffle. But also, they have land through negotiation with the Ledge Group, with Tanzania. They're offering land to us based upon this agreement for $250 an acre, $250 U.S. an acre. Have you heard about that?
No, but you know, honestly, these are the things that we talk about all the time, this doing group economics, finding people that you can find to do things with and getting it done. Just, you know, happy to see people out there doing it. Some of these things, honestly, I'm not familiar with. And a lot of us have similar concepts because it's honestly the way to go after we have seen things play out in Africa with, you know, with some of us that have made the move a few decades ago and don't really have much to show for it because we didn't invest like we should have as a group.
Well, I know that probably there's more of us repatriation to Ghana than probably any other country. Is that correct? Would you say?
Oh yes, more than all other countries are combined.
Okay.
Ghana has the numbers of up to several thousand from the African diaspora.
Okay. Wow.
And with the most being from the U.S.
Okay. Well, listen, give me some closing remarks. It's almost my time to go. And then after that, I'm going to ask for some closing remarks from Brother Sincere. So go ahead, Brother Bomani.
Yes, the main thing I'm always reaching out to us in the African diaspora is to, you know, there's many countries to reconnect to, and it's all up to the individual how you connect. What I do is this, most of what we have set up is Ghana, so. And then we have the land, and we have a full-fledged of how we can connect you with all the people that we have in line, from shippers to people there on the ground, to getting you residency, citizenship, to getting you the basic things that you need to get set up, and for you being a part of a community, getting your land, getting your paperwork, and start building your homes. So that's the consistent bridge you have built there in Ghana. And we're working with other people in other countries to do the same, and other people are naturally doing the same in Ghana and other countries. But that's what, you know, what I've been able to build in my last 15 years, traveling to Ghana and doing our tours. And the roots and culture tours literally just connect you to, you know, the country itself. But even more important, it gives you those conferences, a citizenship conference, then you have a separate investment and repatriation conference, and then you have a whole lot of networking, and then you have the land tour to see the homes and the land and see our community that we have invested in, build up little by little, and then connect you with all aspects of other people that we know in the country, and to really just show a Black economic journey where we're spending our money with our own people, and then we're also investing that money. So that's what we have there in Ghana set up, and other countries, Senegal, the Gambia, and Tanzania, have wonderful things going on there. Those are mainly Roots Tour, but you can get all the details, including the repatriation community, from our website at AfricaForTheAfricans.org, and you can call me directly at 404-931-9429, and that's also a WhatsApp number if you want to send me a message on WhatsApp. And then the email address, afta2010@msn.com, and we have lots of video documentation on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Bomani2007, and then a whole 15 years of photo galleries on our Facebook at facebook.com/Bomani, and then you just click on photos. So those are the documentation that I have from our website to social media for you to view any of our information. That way you can just see the history of what we've been doing, which more so we want people to see is the consistency and the dedication, and not just getting caught up into the hype and getting involved for all the wrong reasons and things like that.
Yeah, because there is a lot of that. There, no, I ain't going to say a lot. There is some of that out there. You've seen some shiesty stuff, brother. But I appreciate you, brother Bomani. I appreciate your tenacity and what you have done.
And it's not something that you can easily do. It takes a lot of different experience and background and history and know what you're doing, because it's a little tricky. But for those who are willing to put the work in, they can, you know, they can get it done. But it took me a long time to get this far. And it's not just something that's been, you know, as simple as that, but it's worth the fight. It's worth the learning and everything. Right. And that's what we have to learn to do. We have to learn to become more business masterminds so we can build business empires.
That's right. All right. Thank you, Brother Bomani. Brother Sincere, got any closing remarks?
Absolutely, family. I just want to say peace and love to everybody out that's listening, also yourself, Baba Oshi. And I want us to focus on this. Our greatest focus should always be on who we are, what we are, and why we are from our very beginning, and our power, which is a collective power and not the illusion of power. So we're going to celebrate each other. And we're going to continue to galvanize the community in a positive way. So stay connected to that effort and that energy. And you can do that. Social media, Sincere, S-I-N-S-E-A-R, Sincere, for all of the different events and what we're doing in the community. We're going to continue to do the work, fam.
Right on. All right, my brothers. Thank you so much. Appreciate you. Believe me, I do. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahadier means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Peace, family. This Friday, my guest will be Brother Akil Parker. Our conversation will be Brother Walter Rodney. Peace, family.